Hello and welcome to Scott Dies Podcast Roundup 2014. Gonna go over some of my favorite podcasts from this past year, some podcasts that I started listening to, some podcasts that you may have listened to already, play some great clips from them, and hopefully get you interested in a few of them, give a few recommendations of things that I haven't listened to yet, but will be looking forward to listening to in the future. But first, a few mentions of some favorites, some old-time podcasts that I'm sure you listen to already, but I'm going to hit them up after this whole intro song thing finishes. So we're going to start off with perhaps the podcast that I've been listening to, and perhaps you've been listening to for the longest time, the first podcast I subscribed to when I started listening to podcasts, which is This American Life with radio legend Ira Glass. It is based on a radio show that has been going on for probably like a decade now, I'm not sure, but is based out of WBEZ Chicago, which is a public radio station. This American Life is a weekly show. They have a theme each week. They talk about stories, real-life stories, from the U.S. and beyond sometimes. They do stories with other public radio shows like Planet Money or ProPublica, and a couple of other public radio kind of stations. We'll cut some of that out. They have a theme each week. They tell different stories on that theme, both fiction and nonfiction. Always a compelling listen. Always a great bit of storytelling from Ira Glass and his crew at This American Life. And the pedigree of one of the podcasts that I'm going to talk about later, that I'm sure, if you know podcasts, you know what it is. Spinning off of This American Life, two other great public radio podcasts that came out of radio shows are Planet Money, which is an economics podcast that doesn't sound like an economics podcast. If you think about money at all, if you're interested in economics and you read Freakonomics and you're like, I never knew I was interested in economics, but Freakonomics was a pretty good read, I would urge you to give Planet Money a listen. They explain economics in a way that makes it easy for everyone to understand. They investigate stories based on economics that are super interesting to a layperson, and kind of look at it through the lens of trying to explain it to a person who doesn't have an economics degree, that is not an economist, and I think they succeed. They do very well at that. And the last kind of older show that I've had on my podcast rotation for a few years now that I'm going to throw out there is Radiolab. Radiolab does some really great and interesting things with sound and audio. They tell a lot of stories kind of in that This American Life vein. If anything, I would say they're a little more sciencey. They tend to go for stories that have a little more of that scientific background, trying to explain either certain phenomena. They usually do pick a theme and do a bunch of stories around that, but these stories are almost always nonfiction, almost always based on experiences of people, and they try and tell them in a very interesting way using audio in ways that enhance the storytelling. Like I said, I don't have clips of those three, This American Life, Planet Money, or Radiolab, but those are things that have been in my podcast rotation for several years. Now, I urge you, if you're just getting into podcasts, to give each and every one of them a listen, give them an episode or two, and see how you like them. All three of them have stayed in my podcast rotation for a reason, and that is because they are all very, very well done. Okay, so let us continue onto the first podcast of my 2014 roundup. This is the podcast that if you've been living under a rock, you probably still have heard about. It kind of exploded as a thing, as a kind of cultural thing this year. And I think for the first time made podcasts a mainstream media to consume, like TV shows and movies. I'm not saying podcasts are quite there yet, but it is certainly one of the first podcasts that I've ever heard people, coworkers, friends, family, that have said, "Hey, have you heard about this thing?" Even if they'd listened to no other podcasts. A spin-off of This American Life, I am, of course, talking about Serial. Serial, the podcast that somehow made it and drilled its way into everyone's head. This is a podcast that, if you're interested in storytelling, if you're interested in true crime, if you're interested in crime journalism at all, it is super compelling. It is something that you want to listen to. It is something that you want to listen to episode after episode. It's the first kind of podcast that I have heard people saying that they wanted to binge on, like a really good TV show. They just wanted to listen to every episode back to back to back to back if they're trying to catch up. And it is also very interesting because I think it is the first time that in the podcast medium someone has tried something like this, which is to tell a story over the course of a number of podcasts, a season essentially, to have a season that is entirely focused on a singular story, to explore it from different viewpoints, and to explore it from different kind of, to break it up in a way that tells the story in sections that are cohesive within each section, and also fill in that overarching storyline. The story is nonfiction. It is based on an old murder case, a 1999 murder case that happened in Chicago. And I'll play for you now just a portion of the, I guess, the pilot, the first episode of Serial. I think that episode was called Alibi, or The Alibi. And what you're going to hear is the main narrator, Sarah Koenig, and a little bit of an interview with the person who is convicted of the murder, whose name is Adnan Syed. The kind of thrust of the entire season of Serial is, did Adnan do it? What is the information that we have about the case? How did the case go right? How did it go wrong? And what ended up happening back in 1999? Here's the clip.
When I first met Adnan in person, I was struck by two things. He was way bigger than I expected, barrel-chested and tall. In the photos I'd seen, he was still a lanky teenager with struggling facial hair and sagging jeans. By now, he was 32. He'd spent nearly half his life in prison, becoming larger and properly bearded. And the second thing, which you can't miss about Adnan, is that he has giant brown eyes, like a dairy cow. That's what prompts my most idiotic lines of inquiry. Could someone who looks like that really strangle his girlfriend? Idiotic, I know. When he first heard Jay's story of the crime, Adnan didn't say, "Well, it didn't happen like that," or "I didn't mean for it to happen like that." He said, "It didn't happen. None of this is true, at all." He says he had nothing to do with Hay's murder, and he doesn't know who did. Hay was Adnan's first serious relationship with a girl. He says he loved her in the way of high school love, but then also in the way of high school, got over her. So that when they broke up for good, sometime before Christmas break of senior year, he says he was sad for sure, but not obsessed or anything.
I just sometimes wish like they could like look into my brain and see how I really felt about her. And no matter what else someone would say, they would see, man, this guy had no ill will towards her. Whatever the motivation is to kill someone, I had absolutely, it didn't exist in me. You know what I mean? No one can ever say why. People can say why. Oh man, he was mad, this, that, or the other. But no one can ever come with any type of proof or anecdote or anything to ever say that I was ever mad at her, that I was ever angry with her, that I ever threatened her. You know, that's the only thing I can really hold on to. That is like my only firm handhold in this whole thing is that no one's ever been able to prove it. No one ever's been able to provide any shred of evidence that I had anything but friendship towards her, like love and respect for her. that's at the end of the day, man. The only thing I can ever say is, man, I had no reason to kill her.
He's adamant about this. You can hear it, right? He's staunch. The problem is, when you ask Adnan to go back and tell his version of what happened that day, to refute Jay's story, everything becomes a lot mushier.
So there you go. That is Serial. You can kind of hear in that clip the storytelling is top-notch. The interviews are some of the most compelling interviews that I've ever listened to in an audio format. And host and producer Sarah Koenig really guides us through this in a way that is both professional yet casual, and I think that's what makes it a really great listen. So Serial, give it a listen if you haven't already listened to all 12 episodes as soon as you found out about it, as soon as you heard a whiff of it and have been waiting for someone to talk to. You can talk to me about it, I guess. We can discuss its merits as a podcast and also how well it actually was able to arrive at some version of a truth. We're going to switch gears now. The next podcast that I want to hit up is a Slate podcast. Slate.com, an online magazine, is famous, I suppose, or infamous for a lot of argumentative writing that is very opinionated and puts forth an argument and tries to support it in its articles. They have a huge slate, huge slate of podcasts as well. And one of the first podcasts that I started listening to on their site that got me to expose to some of their other podcasts, which were also great, is the Slate Political Gabfest. It was mentioned, I think, on the Colbert Report when one of the panelists on the Slate Political Gabfest guested on a segment, and Colbert mentioned it, and I started listening to it, and I have loved it ever since. It is a discussion between three people, usually the same three people, who are David Plotz, who used to be the editor of Slate, probably like a year ago or so, before he stepped down, and John Dickerson, who is Slate's political correspondent, chief political correspondent, I believe they would say, and Emily Bazelon, who also used to work at Slate, no longer does as well. Two-thirds, I guess, of the podcast no longer works at Slate. She is now a staff writer at the New York Times Magazine, I believe. But all three of them discuss kind of the current topics in the political climate week to week, and they discuss it in a way that feels like you're kind of sitting in on a conversation of three very intelligent people. And for me, I'm someone who is interested in politics, but I don't like to follow the actual day-to-day news of politics because it is very depressing. I feel like I never read good news about politics. And so what the podcast does for me is each week kind of solidify on a few topics that they thought were interesting, that I usually find interesting as well. And they discuss it in a way that supports kind of argument with each other and supports analysis to some degree, a way to explore these topics more so than beyond kind of headlines and what you find in articles, which is one person's argument for what something means or what something should mean or how something should be interpreted. What I find the most exciting is when they disagree in this podcast. So I'm actually going to play something, a clip from one of the largest disagreements that I had in 2014, which is a clip from their Gabfest back in July. They were talking about a story that had come out that week, which was, let me get this right, this was about Deborah Harrell, who's an African-American single mother and McDonald's employee who was arrested for leaving her child at a park during the workday because her daughter had really no other good options in terms of what to do with her day. And they go over some of the topics in terms of potentially the economics of richer families being able to provide summer entertainment like summer camp or sending their kids away during the summer when they aren't in school every day. But for a poorer family, for a single mother, what the options actually are. And the clip I'm going to play for you, what they arrive at is their argument about what the correct course of action is here and whether the person that actually turned in the mother that called the police on the fact that the girl was there at the park unsupervised, whether that was the correct thing to do or what our reaction should be to a story like this.
The mother was arrested, but it was tip of the iceberg. So if the kid's being left alone in a park all day, then untold horrible other things are a part of her life, too. That sign of you don't have discrete negligence that it's.
Can we also say what person called the police on this kid?
Oh, like, no. This is good. This is where we're going to have a fight. This is awesome.
My feeling
this
about
is awesome.
That person, whoever he or she is, was that you could ask with concern what's going on, and then maybe you try and help. How is calling the police helping
instead of
maybe seeing if there's some way
Emily,
you could help supervise
this is
or
where
there's
your
some
smug,
other private resolution
This is where your smug
you
self-righteousness ends. Because I wanted to pose this question to you guys. Let's say you go to a playground. You go there in the morning with your child. You go there. You hang out. You see a kid playing alone. You go back at lunchtime. You left something at the park. You go back, check. Oh, the kid is still there playing alone. There's not really – doesn't seem to be attached to any adults. You go back in the evening. The kid is still there playing alone. It is – would be bizarre in this world not to ask yourself questions about this child.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't say not to
talk to the child.
David.
And bizarre when the child
either.
Tells you her mom – is at work or is vague about it, not to think like maybe I have a responsibility to do something.
Well, there's a middle ground.
To call the police, David, that's the part I'm arguing with. I am with you up until that, to try to talk to the parent to see what's happening.
Well, no, kids,
you assume that the police are, I assume in this society, maybe I'm wrong, the police are kind of the good guys. They're going to help sort it out, make sure the kid's
Why
okay.
Why do you assume that?
Well,
I tell my children never to speak to the police if they can possibly avoid it. The police cause trouble.
Oh, my God. That is the most interesting thing I've ever learned
about
you.
No, I'm completely serious about that. The police are – you treat the police with the utmost care and you try to keep them as far away from your life as you possibly can.
That's so interesting, Emily. That is so interesting.
That's how I feel about
you. You lied to the police when the police confronted you.
We have to have a show on that entire – subject.
I do not think in a situation where you are worried about an unsupervised kid that calling the police is any kind of wise move unless you think there is evidence of criminality and danger.
My gosh.
If you think a kid is being abused,
that
you might call the Department
of
Children's Services. I would never call the police on a kid in this situation. I would try to work it out. You're vindicated in this case,
but the wrong that was done here was done by the cops. It wasn't done by the parent who called the cops.
I totally disagree. I think this is exactly a situation of how we don't have enough just private trying to talk to people and work problems out in this society. And everybody goes straight to the red alert alarm system and to government authority instead of trying to just ask a simple question and talk to someone and find out what's going on.
The kid says, sorry, John. The kid says, my mom is at work.
And why did you call me smug 5 minutes ago, by the way?
The kid says, the mom's at work, because it's just a convenient adjective that I keep. It's like lodged in a corner of my brain.
It's whenever Emily says something, I disagree with.
I just say smug. It doesn't have anything to do with the content of what you said.
Okay, good.
I'm going to cut them off there. They go on for another probably like 10 minutes or so fighting with each other. But you can kind of hear there that they have a great rapport with each other. They've been doing this podcast for a really long time. And so not only are they super comfortable talking to each other, but they each kind of bring in their own flavor, their own voice, their own opinion. And it makes for an exciting listen at times and an educational listen all the time, I think. So Slate Political Gab Fest, a thumbs up from me. We're going to move on to a local podcast, something coming out of Oakland, California. Part of the reason that I like them is because they're so close. I could go visit them during their office hours, which I believe they do have. It is a podcast called 99% Invisible, and it is hosted by smooth, silky-voiced Roman Mars, probably one of the best voices in my ear on a busy subway or bus to calm me down and to tell me about something that I didn't know. 99% Invisible, I believe, started as a kind of architectural design podcast. And you'll hear that from time to time. They still have episodes which are fairly architecture-based. But as they've expanded and as they've gone to a weekly podcast, they used to be less frequent before, but as they've gone to a weekly podcast, they've started to explore more and more stories. The kind of baseline of a story being on 99% Invisible is that it is based on things that we do not see, obviously, in the world. And so you can kind of see how 99% Invisible kind of refers to architectural design. It is all around us, but it is, for most of us, completely invisible. It's something that we don't actually look at. And yet things like the way that our buildings are built affect our behavior or affect the way that we live our lives in a really big way that is completely non-obvious. So 99% Invisible stories are always about that. Stories that we don't see unless we know where to look. And so what I would say is 99% Invisible is one of the podcasts that will make you the best dinner party conversationalist. They are always stories that are interesting. They are always stories that are surprising and always stories that have a little bit of that extra flavor that Roman Mars and the 99PI crew give it. I'm going to play probably my favorite story from this past year. This was back in, let's see now, May of 2014. It was episode 114. It's called 10,000 Years. And the basis of this story is on a group of people that got together based on the government wanting some kind of marker or sign or something that could last 10,000 years. That 10,000 years from now, humans, presumably, could come upon this thing and understand what it meant. And what it meant was that there was nuclear waste buried at this location, and people should not dig it up, and should be careful, and should understand the effects of nuclear waste, which is radiation and eventual sickness and death. And they go through, earlier in the show, a lot of different iterations of what this marker could be, what this signpost could be, what kind of visual representation might or might not work, and how so many things we take for granted, signals and certain symbols and things like that, change over time. And so something we may think may be completely obvious to people now, in 10,000 years, would mean the exact opposite or would mean nothing at all. But they arrive, they kind of, at the end, they go into this tangent on this particular solution, which is so charming and so incredibly kind of off the wall that it kind of exemplifies what 99% Invisible is to me.
In fact, the panel that met to figure out the WIP marker system was actually not the first instance of thinkers being brought together to consider how to communicate the dangers of nuclear waste over time. There was one such meeting in 1981 for the Yucca Mountain Project, which was eventually scrapped. And the Yucca Mountain Project had probably the craziest idea proposed, and even though it was never suggested for WIP, it's become the 99PI in-house favorite method of communicating with people 10,000 years in the future. In fact, it's probably the reason why we're doing this story at all. Call it the Raycat solution.
My hands-down favorite approach came from these two European philosophers, François Bastide and Paulo Fabbri. It goes like this. The two of them got thinking that the most durable thing that humanity has ever made is culture. Religion, folklore, belief systems, sure they morph over time, but an essential message can get pulled through. And so Bastide and Fabbri said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to genetically engineer a species of cat that changes color in the presence of radiation. Then we'd release them out into the wild to become feline Geiger counters. And that's just step number one. Step number two, we will create an entire system of folklore about these cats. So we will sing songs about them, we will draw pictures of them, we will tell stories about them. And like any good story, there's a moral. That when you see the cats turn color, run far, far away.
Don't change color, kitty, keep your color, kitty, stay that midnight black. The radiation could change in wise, you can kill it, that's a fact. The radiation, whatever that is something we don't want. Cause it withers our crops and it burns our skin and it turns our livestock gone. So don't change color.
Kitty, don't flash your eyes, so don't change color.
Once this Raycat folklore becomes embedded into our culture, the knowledge it contains can evolve with us, even as our language shifts. 10,000 years from now, these songs and these stories may sound incomprehensible to us, but as long as they communicate this idea that it's not safe to be where the cats change colors, we will have done our job. May the Raycats keep us safe.
I mean, come on, right? How can you not want to listen to that podcast? So that was Roman Mars. And then 99PI contributor Matthew Keelty. And they even got original music. They made a song for that story. And I think that music was by a band called Emperor X. But 99% Invisible, based out of Oakland, California. Great podcast every week. It's just a little snippet, probably like 20 minutes of great dinner party conversation, great conversation starters, sure to get you a mate if you're still single, sure to make your mate smile, at least a little bit if you have one already. The last podcast that I'm going to pitch at you today, tonight, depending on when you're listening to this, is a very funny podcast. Every 2 weeks, I think it is a fortnightly podcast, every 2 weeks makes me laugh. There is no doubt in my mind that when I start up a new episode, I'm going to be giggling to myself in the car. And that is a podcast called Answer Me This. And it is a podcast hosted by two Brits, three actually. It's called Answer Me This with Helen and Ollie. And those are the two main answerers of questions, although they have a sound guy named Martin who chimes in occasionally, and he has a little bit of an echo on his mic, so you remember that he's a sound man and not one of the primary answerers and doesn't get his name in the byline of the podcast or for whatever reason. But they're all British, they're all really funny. They have been doing this for over 300 episodes now, so they know each other very well. They have no problem answering with perfect candor. They go off on tangents, and essentially it's like if you wrote in questions, whether they are advice questions, so if you're writing to an advice column, or if you're writing to a column where you just need general knowledge questions answered because you don't know and you don't want to look it up on Wikipedia. Instead, you want two snarky British people to answer your question. And they do. And that's the entire podcast. Every 2 weeks, it is an hour of delightful British snark and genuine surprise and back and forth coming at you in the guise of questions being answered. But to be fair, it's just a chance for all of them to kind of talk about whatever they want to talk about for an hour. And believe me, you want to listen. The clip I'm going to play is just a question and answer from their best of 2014 podcast. So I don't actually remember or know which specific podcast it came from, but I do remember this question because I was listening to the podcast back then and I remember how much I enjoyed it. So I hope you do too.
Here's a question from Tyler in Manchester who says, I go through a lot of toasters.
Well, every questionnaire brings their own skill to the table, don't they?
I am on to my third toaster in 12 months. I've had the same toaster since 1999. Tyler says, the previous two toasters had not proved fit for purpose.
Do you think he thinks they're for warming up the house with?
Has he watched the Bourne films too much and he puts books in there?
Does that happen?
I love that bit of the poem.
What happens?
He rolls up a magazine, puts it in the toaster, turns the gas on, exits the house, and it blows up.
Oh, wow.
So good. In Bourne 2.
Whereas actually what would happen
is it would pop.
Yes.
Because he'd only put it on to warm.
Yeah, nothing dramatic about that.
As if Tyler hadn't thrilled you enough, Ollie, he continues, I always use Warburton's bread.
Me too. Tribute to Chris.
And its normal-sized slice loaves are always too big to fit into what would appear to be the standard toaster slot size.
Buy another toaster, then. Stop buying the same type of toaster.
Yeah, that's it. What would appear to be the standard toaster size. No, Tyler, you're buying tiny toasters.
I think that's right.
Because my parents have got toaster with a long slot so they can cook pita bread in it. That's what you need. That will fit almost any width of bread.
Long slot, I don't know. What he needs is width.
No, saying long, because one has to trim the crust before insertion.
Oh, so...
Oh, okay, yeah. Interesting. I was thinking thickness. Nope. In and if it
normal
was...
Normal size sliced loaves.
For all those of you out there who do have a problem with thickness, obviously you would be looking for the ones that deal with bagels.
Yes.
Wouldn't you? There's expanding ones for you as well. There's toasters for every type of personality.
And yet Tyler keeps buying the wrong
one. Tyler still struggles. It's almost like it's not the bread that's thick, but him.
Deep burn. Or setting five. Take the bread with you when buying a toaster and make sure that it fits in it. Since you always buy the same bread, you weirdo.
I'm not sure that's going to fly in August.
So there you go. Answer Me This is the name of that podcast. Just giving you a little slice of their irreverent humor. And hope you come back for more. Answer Me This. It's also a lower kind of commitment podcast. It comes out only once every 2 weeks. So you can spare that time, right? We have all reached the end, I suppose. Actually, no. Before I wrap it up, I do want to throw out one last recommendation, which is for a set of podcasts that I have not listened to, but I intend to listen to, and a weird connection between the last two recommendations I made. So Roman Mars, who is the founding force behind 99% Invisible, actually has another project called Radiotopia, which is a collection of podcasts, all of which are different themes and genres, some of which are fiction stories, some of which are nonfiction, some of which are kind of talking heads podcasts. But all of them are kind of independent podcasts that he is trying to collect together in a really great kind of independent movement toward podcasting, toward creating compelling podcasts that are different from the podcasts that you might hear from the larger kind of networks. Things like the regular Slate Talking Head podcasts, things like, you know, sports podcasts that you might be hearing from ESPN or things like that. And I would encourage you just to look up Radiotopia. I intend to start to put a few of them into the rotation, but they cover a wide array of kind of, like I said, genres and styles, and I'm sure you'll find something that you'll want to try out there. From everything I've heard, they are a great set of podcasts. They recently had a Kickstarter and raised a bunch of money, and they're going to be introducing a few new podcasts in the new year, one of which is going to be headed up by Helen Zaltzman, who is the Helen of Answer Me This with Helen and Ollie. So she will be doing, I think, an etymology podcast about the origins of words and phrases, which sounds super exciting to me because she is someone who I've gotten to know as a podcaster on Answer Me This, and I enjoy her stylings, her vocal stylings, and I'm excited to hear what that new podcast will sound like. So I'm not exactly sure when that is going to start, but when it does, it will be called The Illusionist. So if you're like me, you're probably pretty excited to hear that. Like I said, I don't know when that's going to be out, but it will be sometime this year. So, all right, now we'll wrap it up. Thank you, and we have arrived at the end of Scott Dye's Podcast Roundup 2014. Thanks for playing along. Hope I introduced you to a few new podcasts. If not, then I guess you already were listening to all these podcasts, or you listened to the clips and you were like, not for me, which is also okay, I suppose. I'll try and find you something better later, next time, maybe next year. All right, groovy public domain soundtrack. Play us out. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.